The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Now it's time to take a look back with the debrief on some of the biggest stories of the week. And joining me in the studio, managing editor of the Journal Media, Susan Daly, is here, media lecturer at TU Dublin and host of The Ditch podcast, Harry Brown, and political correspondent with the Irish Examiner, Louise Byrne. You're also welcome to the show. Thanks for coming in. We want to start this week with a story we covered on the programme. We heard that there are some councillors in Kerry who want the nationalities of people provided with social housing to be published. Now, they say this is to counter persistent online rumours that non-nationals are getting homes before Irish-born people. And Susan, I'll start with you because you can understand the frustration of the councillors that they feel they don't have the information to counteract those rumours. But will there be unintended consequences if that information is published, do you think?
Absolutely, because you can't predict what the outcomes are going to be. So if you're going, I'm trying to support, a combating a narrative that's out there, but in fact, there's an indication in the narrative that, or in the figures that, yes, there's been a leap in, non-nationals gaining social housing to a proportion that people weren't expecting. Are you prepared for what the consequence of that is, And then there's been talk about is there another motive about wanting this kind of transparency on data? I think the key thing here is, and interesting, if you go to the CSO website, they have quite a famous philosophy about data on there, and it's published the statistics, protect the individuals. And I think that's where the decision would have to be made here is, like, it can be useful, and like social housing is a public service funded by taxpayers. Aggregate statistics can be really useful in policymaking, deciding, look, what schools we need. We need more Catholic schools. We need non-denominational because there's a growing population in that or whatever. So they can be used in that way.
But if you break those figures down into individual councils, you risk putting people in a vulnerable situation.
You do, and you risk identifying people. And then you also don't have context. You only have data, and data without context can be dangerous. A caveat, for example, would be that nationality alone could be misleading. You could have non-nationals that have lived and worked in Ireland for decades, paid taxes, have children here who are Irish citizens. And what is that information then? How is it going to be useful?
Mm-hmm.
Or weaponised?
But it is interesting, Louise, isn't it? The politicians are pushing for this information because they feel that they're being put under pressure by their constituents who are saying these things. A lot of it is happening online.
Yeah, and I think it's quite indicative of where we are as a society right now because the immigration question or the question of non-nationals living here is quite a hot topic. But, for something like social housing, you have to have the right to reside here long term to access social housing. And I mean, it means that if people have come through direct provision, have been given leave to remain here, it means that they have the right to get social housing. And it's not as if people are arriving off the plane or arriving off the boat, as often the rumour goes, and straight into social housing. But I think the crux of the issue here is that we don't have enough social homes in this country. The government consistently for the last number of years has missed its total social housing target. And that is the issue. And I mean, rather than stoke up the flames and stoke up, that feeling of animosity, I think, that people could potentially feel if they are on the housing list. And like Susan said, someone who could have lived here for decades, but just so happened to be born in another country, they could be just as entitled to a social home as, the next person down the list who was born and raised in Ireland. So you're getting into very, I think, tricky territory, but this can't detract away from the fact the government is not fulfilling its obligations to build social houses.
Yeah, and I see what you're saying. That is at the root of all of this. But Harry, the councillors are saying, if I had this information, I would be able to disprove these false rumours that are circulating on social media, that there are people who are not born in Ireland who are getting the social houses ahead of Irish people.
Well, would they, though? I mean, that is the question. You know, and what would be the threshold for disproof of this? What would be the number that would be satisfying to kind of this really diversionary narrative about housing that circulates online? The fact is we're a republic. The fact is that anyone who's entitled to be here is also entitled to social services here. The fact is that for a non-national to get on the housing list, the qualifications are, for the most part, pretty close to what the qualifications for citizenship are. Mm-hmm. That not everyone who meets the qualifications for citizenship necessarily takes it up. But, you know, you have to be here a pretty long time. You have to have leave to remain if you've come through the asylum system. As Louise says, the problems in the housing system are to do with the lack of construction of social housing. They're also to do with pressures on the market that really don't have to do with immigration, if you like, at the of the poorest people who would qualify for housing. It has to do with pressures caused by vulture landlords from multinational companies. It's pressures caused by the migration of well-off people who drive up rents in our cities. So it is, it seems to me, I understand where this narrative is coming from, but you know, it's the wrong place.
You're addressing the wrong problem.
Yeah, can I say there's actually a solution in both what Louise and Harry are saying there is that what the councillors are saying that they're trying to provide is transparency. They're saying transparency will calm and build trust. And the transparency needed is not necessarily like, here's data everybody interpreted for themselves. As you say, Harry, what's the threshold that will make people happy who are already feeding into a particular narrative? But there is transparency on processes, which is in order to get X, Y, and Z, you have to meet these criteria. If it makes really, really clear what those processes are, like something like, you know, citizen information is an amazing resource. They actually are brilliant at speaking directly. I think just get the person who writes the citizensinformation.ie website on and get them to write a primer on who's entitled to what. Is, you know, that's the kind of transparency that's useful. What we're seeing here maybe is a little bit of a panicked knee-jerk reaction to people are asking for this. I need to give it, like, calm a second. You're a public representative. What's the most useful, positively impactful way of doing this? And we actually have the information. That's the solution. Give transparency on the processes. Just giving stats on their own is actually going to either cause more panic, feed into a misinformation narrative that's already there, yeah, just not solve the issue. People want to pack the book on it.
Yeah,
they're terrified.
And people want really quick answers. Yes. You know, they don't want that level of detail. They just want to know, am I right here? Mm. Or do they care whether they're right or not when it comes to rumours on social media? And should you ever try to address them?
Is there any data point that will change people's minds?
Exactly.
And the answer to that is, generally speaking, kind of no. Mm. You know, that, and certainly in something like this where the data could be interpreted ambiguously, where there are different kinds of rules and thresholds, I think it's highly unlikely that this transparency would somehow result in everyone feeling good about immigration suddenly in Ireland, that there's nobody jumping queues or anything like that. I think that, as Susan says, the question is about process. It's not about numbers.
But at the same time, there's no point denying the fact that the increased population that is in part caused by an influx in people coming here, not just asylum seekers, migrants who are coming to work, who have work permits, that is putting a strain on our housing system. And I was speaking to James Brown last week for the Irish Examiner, and he said that, you know, I said to him, can you give me a pinpoint, is the homelessness figure is going to fall this year? And he said, no, this is going to be an issue for years to come, because no one could have anticipated the increase in population that we have had. What is the answer to that? He says, build more homes. What are they doing? Oh, I don't know. But they are trying to build more homes. They are not building enough. And he admitted that himself to me. So there's no point denying that migration is having an impact on our housing. It is causing rents to increase. It is causing, you know, house prices to go up. That is not because of people moving here. That is because of supply and demand.
Yeah, and the last years where the house building wasn't happening, and that'll take a long time to fix. Now, I want to move on to Micheál Martin and his deepfake, because he posted online warning people not to be fooled by this AI-generated ad, which appeared to show him encouraging people to invest in a get-rich-quick scheme. We can hear the deepfake now in his response to it.
I've proven that anyone can earn €40,000 at any age with just a phone and €250. This evening, you'll see your first €1,000 profit in your account, or I'll personally refund you €10,000.
So this is clearly very false material pertaining to myself, illustrative of the kind of manipulation and distortion that can take place on social media, and a reminder to us all to be vigilant on social media and to take care, and for the platforms also to make sure that such material never gets online and that it's taken offline as soon as it's identified.
It was a terrible deepfake.
The worst.
Really bad. I mean, he's not going to give you 10 grand. Let's just put that out there right now. But clearly he is concerned enough about it to make that retort and response. But it is getting more difficult in some cases to differentiate between real and fake.
Yeah, no, that was pretty bad. Now, I say that as someone who probably recognises Micheál Martin's voice quicker than my own and hears his voice in my nightmares, as I'm sure he does with mine.
That's a whole other conversation.
As I'm sure he does with mine. But That is pretty bad. But there are really sophisticated ones out there, and they're only going to get more sophisticated. And I mean, you've seen this crop up. I don't know if you remember during the presidential election. Again, a really bad one, but it was Sharon Eve Yolon and Paul Cunningham talking about Catherine Connolly pulling out of the presidential election. And again, it was really poor, but there are people who could potentially fall for that. And Malcolm Byrne, the Fianna Fáil TD, had a bill that was passed by the Dáil last week, but has to go through the rest of the legislative process. And he is essentially looking to make it a crime for someone to use your likeness, your voice, your image as part of a deep fake without your consent. Because as technology progresses, this is only going to get worse. And, you know, you had Aisling Maloney on from The Independent earlier, but Simon Harris at a doorstep we were at yesterday was saying that he saw one of himself. Another person whose voice I hear in my nightmares just for to be
balance.
just for balance. But, you know, he had to look at one twice to make sure that it wasn't him. So if, you know, these are only going to get worse. And I think we have to have a conversation in this country about media literacy. Like, we're talking about banning social media for under 16s. What about everyone else who can potentially fall down rabbit holes and get, you know, tricked by these things?
Yeah. And I mean, I get that we have to be sensible, but these companies are taking money for these ads.
Absolutely.
They're making money off this stuff, you know?
Yeah. There's not enough protections in the tech platforms. I mean, we can talk about the deepfakes themselves, and obviously AI is allowing scammers to generate huge amounts of persuasive content that we absolutely can't keep up with. And I suppose the rule of thumb with these is not that they can fool everyone, right? So everyone, even notwithstanding your own face-to-face with Micheál Martin, everyone knows he doesn't have an English accent, and that if he's any way impassioned, the Cork accent of anything ramps up, right? So if he was really excited about this savings scheme, we'd be in the heavens at this point with it, right? But it's more that it just has to fool enough people. Like, criminals don't need a perfect fake or perfect product. They just need to throw enough of it around that they get the right person at the wrong time for that person, and they make a lot of money. People panic and they act out and they lose money. Financial scams are the big one. We are worried probably on the existential level of more the manipulation of elections and democratic values and so on. They're certainly happening. But really where people are making the money right now is like they're making the call for you. And there's things like voice cloning. That's getting very sophisticated, notwithstanding trying to match an image to a voice is different. But you have people where they're able to source your voice from lots of things. Our phones are recording. I mean, I sound like conspiracy theory, but they are. They're recording us. And they can, there have been terrible stories, and this particularly in the States where it started, where people are getting messages, voicemails going, "I'm in trouble, mom."
And it's your child's voice.
No amount of sensible, intelligent override is going to stop you flicking the switch and going, "My child's in trouble," on that. And the deep fakes, like, it is a scale thing, but they are getting better. The fake celebrity endorsements, we've been looking at that on the Journal Fact Check for a few years and keep kind of debunking them, but like in a whack-a-mole way. So we've had to start writing like explainers about, look, here's some tells on it, and it's unlikely that, you know, there was particular RT personalities were selling you things or whatever, face cream. This investment product. Simon Harris, he's right. He was actually, there was a bump, a 20% bump, I think, in financial scams linked to the new investment scheme that was announced, where it was like picking up on that. So for everything that goes in that's legitimate, there's a plot kind of start. But the issue is that these things are popping up and the platforms are like, "Oh, we can't," you know, they just reinforce it. They do it. We're doing our best to track them. They can't be really, because they are absolutely facilitating the platforming of this. And we've seen how quickly they can move if they want to kind of go, "Hey, we're leaning into AI, we're doing this." When it comes to shutting down financial scams, the will is not there.
But scammers we've had always with us at the same time. I can remember when they were in the small ads in the back of magazines. You know, it wasn't a question of having them online. Now we've got our lovely data centers, of course, processing and producing all of these wonderful scams and providing, let's face it, providing content for people to talk about. That's part of the phenomenon of the scam as well, is that it kind of, even mentioning it is kind of viral content. Mm. And everybody sort of prides themselves on being the first to spot the scam. Half your WhatsApp feed is people saying, "Watch out for this scam."
Yeah, there was a really interesting contribution from an expert we had on earlier this week. And they said years ago, you'd have your snake oil salesman in the town square, and there would be somebody, because it was an experience that you had together with other people.
The newspaper industry grew up around those to a certain extent.
But somebody somebody would always call them out, but you're consuming these ads alone for the most part.
But then we come and we talk about them together, and they do become part of our collective experience, you know, one at a time, sure. But I think that to a certain extent, there is something of a moral panic around these. I think that there's a larger question about AI and about its effect on our lives. Also about the generation of mistrust, of course, because sometimes what's going to happen is that people who are genuinely trying to communicate, genuinely trying to sell something, genuinely trying to share an idea, people are going to say, oh, it's just another one of those scams. Mm-hmm.
But when you see all these people, though, you know, you hear these stories every so often of, oh, I thought he was, I don't know, Brad Pitt, 100,000 euro.
Oh, yeah, that was the famous one in France, wasn't it?
Yeah, I thought he was contacting me and it wasn't him. Like, if people can fall for, you know, just messages like that, if you get these deepfakes involved, if you get voice, you know, manipulation, if you can get all that stuff, it leaves people so much more vulnerable. And it's a question of, are we actually doing anything at all? I know Simon Harris is suggesting that there's EU legislation coming down the track, but sure, how long does that take? And by the time that comes around, how more sophisticated is the technology going to have become?
Now, are you looking forward to getting your 7K bag for your holidays? Because you're going to have to get one.
I have a real issue with this.
The rules are changing, so the 10K bag's going to go. The airlines can't charge anymore and you'll be allowed to take your 7kg bag on for free. What is the problem, Louise?
If you think I can travel with only 7kg, that's not happening.
Depends how long you're going away for, shorty.
Well, I was in London. I went Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I had a 10kg bag. You know, I dropped it because, you know, the way you get your free dropped bag.
Check it in.
So I dropped my bag and I was gone for 3 days and like it was warm in London, so I didn't even have winter clothes with me. I didn't even bring another pair of shoes. 9.8 kilograms for 3 days.
A fine art, Louise, you have it down to, do you?
You couldn't buy anything in London.
I could not. And I had to put a pair of jeans back in the bag that I had worn over and I was going, oh God, I'm going to be over now. But I was not. But like 7kg, well, A, it's nothing. But B, my other issue with carrying your bag on, right, is we have these fancy scanners for your liquids in Dublin Airport. If you can bring your bag through, what about bringing it back if the airport you're returning home from doesn't have the fancy scanners? So I'm all for a check bag and 7kg is not enough.
Well, you can pay for a check bag, can't you?
I'd rather pay for a check bag.
Yeah, that's what you can do.
Isn't it kind of the setup of it? I actually booked flights earlier this week to London for one night with my son. We're doing something in September for one night. Rory, if you're listening, this is a surprise for your birthday. I just realised that.
Is he listening? No, he's in school.
He's in school. Maria, don't play this back for him. I didn't actually book. I chose not to book anything. We are going with our little small backpacks and it's going to be underwear. And it's going to be toothbrush, and for me it's going to be a bit of mascara.
You can do that, can't you? You can do it under the seat.
But I had the choice to take it off. But I will say, I was like, oh my God, because I wasn't even aware that I could drop the 10K thing. And then I saw it was like, yeah, it is cheaper. I think the principle is going to be very popular. The economics are always going to be more complicated than the headline, right?
So your ticket price is going to go up.
The ticket price will go up. Do you think that Ryanair are going to miss a trick on this? But I would say that I would favour transparent pricing over rock bottom headline fees, and then you get in and you're like, you have to add your 10K because you're there three days, Louise. You're absolutely right. I wouldn't be doing it in a tiny bag with that. So I'd rather see the transparent pricing part, and then, you know, I can opt out. Apparently some of the airlines that may be part of it, is not fully rounded out, that they may be able, you may be to opt out of the 10K. But if you've a transparent, and for most people, the scenario you're describing, Louise, is the kind of minimum that people are hoping.
And did you have to pay to sit beside your son on the plane?
Do you know, interestingly, because I know that was the thing. No, there were certain seats we could choose because he was under a certain age. He was under 12.
Oh yeah. But you didn't have to pay because that's going to be gone as well. They won't be allowed to charge you for sitting together with your
children. I feel like that was always a thing. I was surprised that I didn't have to. I was like looking around going, Michael, he was going to jump out from behind the curtains at me and go, yeah, surprise sucker. That's not the case, you know. I don't know.
You just do feel that there's always another threshold around the corner, another measuring tape that comes out, another scale, another way of finding some way to charge us for something. And I think that there's 7K is just going to become another one of those things. But we all know, we've all seen the people with the backpack that is allegedly going to fit under the seat that doesn't.
Although they're clamping down on that a lot more because the commission's gone up for the staff when they catch people.
Ridiculous little bin at the gate. Oh,
do you
my God.
Do you want to know a trick? So, because they don't check this till you get to the actual, like, you know, you're, when you're getting on the plane, get a duty. If you have a different bag, like a bigger bag, get a duty free bag. Buy something in duty free. Shove your bag in the duty free bag because they don't check that.
Don't they?
Do they not?
Nope.
They will now. Now that you've said
oh,
it.
Oh, Louise, come on. You ruined it for everybody.
But I wonder as well, is there enough room for everyone to have a 7kg bag on the plane? Because
no.
You know those overhead bins, they get full so quickly. Like if you're last on the queue boarding the plane, you are not getting your bag into that into
But also
that bin,
imagine the animosity and the fight that that is going to cause on planes. Like, you know, when you see people queuing, this is why I never queue up because I never have my bag with me because I always drop it off. But you know, when you see people queuing up from the minute they literally announce they're going to start boarding in half an hour, that is to drop your bags. Imagine how feral that is going to become if everyone is bringing a 7kg.
Don't do
onboard.
A hard shell. Carry on. That's my key.
It's a big World Cup weekend, but it's going to be even bigger next week because England have their second match on Tuesday and then they're playing Ghana and then Panama on Saturday. Will you be supporting them?
No.
Ha!
Susan?
Well,
it's coming home.
Is it coming home for me? I was laughing when I was thinking about this topic because, like many a 1970s born Irish person, I was born in London. My parents were Irish emigrants there, economic emigrants, stayed there for the best part of 10 years. My dad had been there best part of 10 years before that. Returned when I was 2, my sister was 7.5, and brought with her a little Cockney accent as well. There was a famous recording among our family, it got lost, of her talking to my granddad, and she was like, "Where's my red wellies, granddad?" And it went missing. You know, sorry, that was very, Mary Poppins. Yeah, safe to say, though, I still wouldn't be able to bring myself to shout for England. I can't explain it, but I feel it. And my great colleague Ronan Early in the 42-hour sports site wrote about this very thing, I think on Thursday on the 40th. Go check it out because he's way more thoughtful and he's a bigger person than I am, but he was also born in London and he's a more nuanced view on it. And he's kind of like, we create this as a debate. And honestly, now what he didn't say was, I'm thinking like people in England are like, we don't think of you at all. We don't care whether you shout for us or not.
Yeah.
It's only among ourselves, isn't it?
We mightn't shout for them, but we will watch the matches. Thank you all for coming in, Louise and Harry and Susan. Good to have you with us. And if you're listening back to highlights from the show over the weekend, don't forget to check out the latest episode of Never Have I Ever with thanks to O'Brien's Wines. This week, we're hitting peak wedding season right now. I sat down with celebrant Karen Dempsey. Just search for Never Have I Ever on the Go Loud app or wherever you get your podcasts and like or follow too so that you never miss an episode. That brings us to the end of the programme. Thank you very much for listening and for getting in touch. If you missed anything, you can go and listen back on the Go Loud app.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.